Mr. Kerry actually had an article, an editorial, that he had published in the New York Times. And there was a rebuttal piece that wasn't a rebuttal piece, that actually concurred with Kerry. This one published by Senator John McClown and Lindsey Graham, who, in their opinion piece in the Times, said that ISIS was a serious cancer and that the American response needs to be an immediate military strike. Yep, let's go back and use the military. Let's not say, all right, let's go back in time and understand how the Islamic State came to exist. Oh, it was because America invaded Iraq with the military. It didn't exist prior to our invasion, and it's grown steadily since our invasion. So, I understand the perfect response to that is let's go back and re-engage militarily in Iraq, and maybe we'll create a counterpart. Maybe we'll create a Shiite Islamic State, an Islamic State too, and then we can arm both sides and they can go kill one another. It'll be really fun to watch. Is that the strategy, John McClown, that you want to deploy? Or do you want to go find the five moderate Muslims in the world and give them really powerful weapons? Let them fly American drones. What do you think, Glenn? Is there a sane individual anywhere within 100 miles of Washington, D.C.?
Confusion and overemphasis. There's the old saying that war makes strange bedfellows. We actually find ourselves in a situation where we could find ourselves fighting shoulder to shoulder with the Kurds and with the Iranian al-Quds forces. And in theory, we could find ourselves trying to help Assad. And yet we have these diplomatic things like, yes, but we don't want to give the idea that, like, we approve of Assad. And we don't want to owe the Iranians anything. We've never been at war with East Asia. We've always been at war with Eurasia. And then the other thing is, before the time of Billy Mitchell sunk a ship with a bomb drop from an airplane, air power wasn't thought to be much of a game changer. Now it's kind of like the other way around. The military always goes for one overemphasis or the other. They started like the top principles because they had come to be an overemphasis.
Oh, they always start with their drones.
Now they're overemphasizing air power. No, you can't hold anything with air power. All you can do is break things.
But once you're committed with air power, first you start with the drones, you get committed and you say, look, it's working, we just need to ramp up the battle. And so then you start flying bombers and you say, boy, that's working, we need to ramp up the power and we need to solidify our gains, and then you send foot soldiers in and all of a sudden you're committed and thousands of people die and you squander trillions of dollars and you make a mess of things. I've read this story before. We've gone through this story time and time again. It always makes a bad situation worse.
And there's this new emphasis with Islam. We've seen all through the weekend now. We've had this Islamic theologian going on the networks, justifying everything. And we have, the new, a more sophisticated propaganda push, especially in Europe and Britain. And so now they're out to win hearts and minds as well as cut off heads. You can either win the mind or you can cut off the head and take the whole mind with it.
I guess.
So I do think, that if they're going to become both brutal in the field and, more sophisticated in the way they propagandize, handle their finances, stuff like that, the other four-fifths of the human population better decide what they want to do about, telling Islam, no, we don't want you taking over the world with Sharia law.
Here's the statement by Kerry in that regard. With the united response led by the United States and the broadest possible coalition of nations, of which none have coalesced, the cancer of ISIS will not be allowed to spread to other countries, Kerry wrote. The world can confront this scourge and ultimately defeat it. ISIS is odious, but it is not omnipotent. The interesting thing here is that the scourge, the cancer that is the Islamic State, is in every state of the world. There isn't a single, there is not a single state in this world that doesn't have Muslims in it.
Right.
And the Islamic State is Islam. And that's the,
right.
So he's talking about responding to something that, that the infection is already throughout the entire body. It's like trying to deal with the cancer after it's spread to every organ and every area of the body. You know, if you've got lymphoma and you've got skin cancers and you've got cancer of the lungs and the heart and the brain, I'm going to tell you, there is really no reason to operate at that point. You're
right.
going to die.
Right.
And that's what's happened with Islam. It's a deadlier disease than Ebola and spreads by contact, and we didn't quarantine it.
And I'm wondering how much influence on American foreign policy the pleas of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates are having, because these, you know, Sunni barbarians with Ferraris are very afraid of ISIS. And I'm thinking they're in the background going, do something, do something, do something.
Yeah, well, certainly the Saudi Arabians are. The Qataris are still providing weapons to them. You know, the Qataris is like the cobra snake charmer that thinks that because it feeds the cobra, that the cobra will never bite it. Senator John McClown, in his piece, said that that we need to attack ISIS, and that but the way that we ought to attack them is by forming an inclusive Iraq government that is inclusive of Iraqi Sunnis rather than pushing them toward terrorist groups. Now, we're providing weapons of mass destruction to the Shiites, including the Iranian special forces. And we're providing weapons to the Kurds so that they can maintain their own independent state. And in Syria, we're continuing to provide weapons to the Islamic State and the Sunnis. And what John McClown is opting for is an inclusive Iraq. I mean, what is it about these guys? I mean, it's just so unbelievably stupid. That why doesn't somebody say, listen, Iraq is badly broken. When we deposed Saddam Hussein, that was a mistake. The Kurds need their own personal country. Let's give them that little stretch in the north. That'll be Kurdistan. And then we'll give the west to the Sunnis. The Shias can have the east. And let's just break up Iraq, since there is a 0% chance they're ever going to have an inclusive government. Why not just say that?
Yeah. Well, I know, not to mention, like, our resources, you know, are not really, we're not really equipped for all this military stuff. Obama's gotten rid of a major chunk of the, you know, top brains in the, you know, the officer corps. We won't be bombing anybody with F-35 because that's the world's biggest, single most expensive weapon system ever developed. It doesn't work. The Raptors don't work very well. We're going to be pulling out A-4 Skyhawks from John McCain's generation to do his dirty work.
Oh, of course. And then you look at Syria. The war in Syria is really over. The largest cities in Syria, like Aleppo, Homs, they're destroyed. I mean, they're literally destroyed. They are the tangled heap of rubble. All that Assad controls now is Damascus. It's not a country of Syria anymore. It's the city-state of Damascus. He doesn't control anything other than the city-state of Damascus.
Well, just like Kabul, Afghanistan with Karzai.
Yeah, exactly. It's a city-state. And that's all there is to it now. And the rest of it's either destroyed or it's under the control of the Islamic State. And why would we want to rid that realm of the Islamic State? What they're doing in Syria is what we alleged that we wanted done, which was Assad removed from power. They've accomplished that. And poor little al-Nusra. I mean, they used to be the dominant force, and now they're having to fight for a little town in the Golan just to be relevant. It appears that virtually all of al-Nusra's fighters went to the Islamic State.
Yeah. Well, it's not, I guess it's not surprising that, that there's this much fragmentation and internecine rivalry and everything like that. I mean, it's really quite predictable, I would think, and just when I think of, as in the days of Noah, and that the whole earth will be filled with violence. It's very simple. The whole earth will be filled with violence.
Exactly.
And it's going. I mean, this is kind of a very predictable form for this all to take.
Here's McClown's final statement and his editorial piece. But ultimately, ISIS is a military force, and it must be confronted militarily.
Why can't they collect their finances? Like, if they can do bail-ins in Cyprus, why can't they shut down their bank account?
Yeah, calling the Islamic State a military force is like calling the United States a military force. If just saying the United States is nothing but a military force, it's no different than what they just said about the Islamic State. The Islamic State is a religious entity primarily. Secondarily,
right.
It is a governing entity. That is what it's second best at. Third, it is a financial entity. That's what it's third best at. And fourth, it is a military entity. It is all of those things, but it most certainly cannot be described as simply a military force that can be fronted militarily. It is primarily a religious institution that can only be confronted by words. That's how you confront religions. If you want to spare somebody from a ridiculous cult, let's take the Branch Davidians, for example. If you want to dissuade Branch Davidians from being Branch Davidians, and the whole thing is stupid. Branch Davidians is an adjunct to the Seventh-day Adventists, and the religion is absolutely insane. So you have two techniques. Technique one is the Janet Reno technique, which is you use military hardware and you try to stomp them into oblivion. How well did that work?
Well, the United States is a monetary and a mercenary entity.
Yeah. If you want to confront a religious entity, there's only one way that you can do it. Evidence and reason. Now, when we return, Scott, over the break, read a article that was sent to us by a listener, and we're going to talk about reason and politics on this program for some time. We have stated that a religious person is essentially immune to evidence and reason. That even if the testimony is from God himself, it won't faze a religious individual. They will cling to their belief even when confronted by irrefutable arguments. Well, there was a study done on a group of people as to whether or not they could be rational in their conclusions. And in this particular test, Scott, you listened to the video presentation, which was not by the individual that conducted the test, but somebody reporting on it.
It was originally done by Dan Cohen or something like that from Yale University.
Okay.
And he did it with a few people from like Ohio State University and things like that.
Okay.
And what they did was they took 1,111 people.
Okay.
And they brought them in and they asked them to do a simple, not a simple math equation, but they basically put a math problem in front of them, and it was, will this, the skin cream is designed to reduce your rash. And so then they put a little table in front of them, and it was people that, it was divided into four quadrants, people that did use it, didn't use it, and then people that said it made it better, made it worse. And the numbers were 223 people said it made it, that did use it, said it made it better. 75.
The bottom line is that the analysis here is what we've always talked about. If math, the ability to exercise good judgment is all about probabilities and making connections. And when asked to resolve a healthcare equation and make these connections, most people could process the information.
It was
60%, and come up with probabilities.
60% came up with the correct answer, okay. Whether it was through guesswork or whatever, and 40% got it wrong.
Okay. So what you're saying here is that even on a 50-50 choice, that it was only 10% better than 50-50 in terms of being able to process information to come up with probabilities.
Yeah. So,
okay. But that's not very impressive.
Those people still took the next step, and they got the question right.
60% got it right, as opposed to just 50-50 on a 50-50 choice. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And then,
not very impressive.
No. Well, have you looked at math scores lately for people?
No.
Yeah, they're not very impressive. Then they took they didn't flipped around. Used the exact same numbers, flipped around, and made it, they just flipped around the options and things like that. And people, it was 60-40. And then they changed it up to where rather than being about something as, healthcare-wise, which would be very kind of a neutral thing, they switched it up to something that was more of a politically driven question, asking them, using the exact same numbers, they asked him about does gun control reduce crime, and they changed it from rather did use to didn't use, that gun control does work, doesn't work, and
four sets of numbers, and you've got to compare those sets of numbers.
You got
to come up with a rational, logical conclusion.
And here, no matter what the numbers said, people would kind of told their political lines. They didn't care what the numbers told them. They basically just went blind. If the number they were looking at confirmed what they believed, so they saw 223 was the biggest number there. They assumed, well, obviously that's the correct answer, and that's what I always believed. Gun control, does work.
Works or doesn't work.
Yeah, and then again they flipped them around and things like that, and it wouldn't matter. People would still, if they got it right one time, they would get it, once the numbers were flipped around, they would get it wrong the next time, and so
So there's absolutely no correlation between a conclusion and the evidence if the issue is political.
Yeah, when it became political, people decided to throw math out the window and just go with what they were seeing.
Their opinions, right? Yeah. So when it's and what they didn't do here is try to quantify the people as anti-political, apolitical, and extraordinarily political, which would have been an interesting analysis and to do the study that way. I'm pretty certain I know how the outcome would come out. But what they did here is just average people. I'm going to give you a healthcare question. I'm going to give you a loaded political question. And the loaded political question, Americans were universally incapable of processing information.
Yeah, for the most
evidence
part.
Evidence and reason did not matter. And that really has been the impetus of the show, is to provide people with reasons to exercise good judgment, to emphasize the evidence, and then encourage people to think morally and rationally about it, and to stop the knee-jerk reaction that has been indoctrinated into so many of us. Meanwhile, the FBI and Homeland Security, that is redundant these days, the FBI is part of the Department of Homeland Security, said that there were no specific or credible terrorist threats to the United States homeland from the Islamic State. Then why are we bombing them? An intelligence bulletin issued to state and local law enforcement said there is no credible threat to the United States as a result of recent airstrikes in Iraq. Then why are we striking? Intelligence officials believe there are roughly 7,000 foreign fighters in Syria. I believe that number is off by about tenfold. U.S. officials fear that those individuals could easily return home, radicalized, and apply terrorist training received while in Syria. By the way, ISIS is not using terrorist tactics. Don't know that the standard suicide bombing tactic is not something that is deployed routinely by the Islamic State. They have been far more just stand-up military we are better trained, better led, better equipped than you are. And so, it's either John McCain's right and they're a military unit or they're a terrorist organization, one of the two. You know, you didn't want to call them a terrorist organization, and then the way to respond to them would be by terror. I suppose that was the reason you'd want to call them a terrorist organization. But the fact is that there's no one being radicalized by the Islamic State. If you're not already a fundamentalist, zealous Muslim, you're not going over there to fight with them. And that Islam has already ruined you before you decide to go there. You aren't going to become more Muslim while you're there. And the Islamic State is amongst Islamic terrorist organizations is probably the least dependent on using terrorism. So it drives to the heart of the problem is, what are we doing there? Holden, out to traveling, Holder, out traveling around the world in Oslo, gave a speech and he said, this is a global crisis in need of a global solution. Well, that part's true, but only in one response, in one way. The Islamic State is regional. It's eastern Syria, western Iraq. Islam is a global crisis, and it needs to be quarantined, but no, we don't want to talk about that. The Syrian conflict has turned that region into a cradle of violent extremism. Yeah, the Syrian conflict, because America decided, along with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait, to arm Sunni Mujahideen to depose Bashar al-Assad, has turned that region into a cradle of terrorism, of militancy. It's our weapons and our involvement that did that. John McClown was wrong when he said that the Syrian, there's a free Syrian army and that they're good old boys and they're not fundamentalist Muslims. He was wrong. We weaponized Islam. We made a mess. Holder said in his July speech in Oslo, but the world cannot simply sit back and let it become a training ground from which our nationals can return and launch attacks, and we will not. Syria is not being used as a training ground to launch attacks in America. To say that belies the entire purpose of the Islamic State, how it came to exist, why it exists, what they are achieving. Their goal is not to attack America. Their goal is to control an Islamic Sharia-compliant area in the Middle East and to take that area from both Shiites and secularists. That's it. That's their goal. Syria's foreign minister said on Monday that his country welcomed any potential military strikes by the U.S., and Syria, isn't that, as Glenn was saying, strange bedfellows. The very country that we wanted to bomb out of existence is saying, yeah, come on, bomb us. Targeting the Islamic State. And that, Bashar al-Assad's government has to be warned first. But no, the United States thinks that the world belongs to it and has already announced that we aren't notifying Bashar al-Assad when we go violate his airspace. Now, the problem with that is that the Syrians have a decent surface-to-air missile capability, anti-aircraft capability. And if it's deployed, then it'll bring down American airplanes. You know, it's a Russian-built surface-to-air anti-aircraft missile defense system. We ought not be sending our boys into harm's way under those circumstances, just because we're too proud to notify Assad that we're coming. Quote, Syria is ready to cooperate and to coordinate with regional and international efforts to combat terrorism in accordance with UN resolutions and with respect to Syrian sovereignty. Foreign Minister Walid al-Mualim told a press conference in Damascus. It's funny, you know, that all this time Assad has been saying that those who have been attacking him are terrorists, and now the world seems to agree. Everyone is welcome, including Britain and the United States, to take action against the Islamic State and al-Nusra with prior full coordination with the Syrian government, al-Mualim continued. The foreign minister warned that any action taken without direct agreement from Damascus would be seen as an aggressive action against Syrian territory, and that Syria would not stand idle. The Obama administration has been hinting about Syrian intervention since the Islamic State carried out what American officials called its first terrorist attack against the U.S., referring to the killing of an American journalist, James Foley. You know, it's amazing that a fake assassination video is being used as the justification for war, but it isn't if you put all of America's prior wars into context. Virtually all of them were aided and abetted by frauds, by things that were literally positioned to facilitate the justification for what the country previously had decided it wanted to do. On Sunday, a week ago, the Joint Chiefs Chair, Martin Dempsey, indicated the Pentagon was ready for a broader intervention against the group. Oh, nothing the Pentagon loves more than war. I can assure you that had there been a coordination between the U.S. administration and the Syrian government, the reported rescue operation by Washington would not have failed. This is what al-Mualim told the press here last weekend, is that when Washington said that they had tried to rescue Foley, who I believe, by the way, is still alive, that the Syrian government saying, you know, if you had coordinated with us, your mission would not have failed. But because you did not coordinate with it, you're just way too proud for that sort of thing, you did fail. The remark comes a week after the army, backed by pro-regime paramilitary troops and Lebanon's Shiite Hezbollah movement. But it's not Lebanon's Shiite Hezbollah movement. It's Iran's Shiite Hezbollah movement. Reclaimed a strategic district in the countryside of Damascus after a suffocating siege on rebels that lasted more than a year. The area around Damascus, the Syrian government, the Assad regime, is an absolute control of. They control Damascus, and they have destroyed Homs and Aleppo. And the rest of the country is under the control of the Islamic State. The Obama administration is pressing U.S. allies to increase their support for moderate rebel groups in Syria, as well as the possibility of military operations. So, according to this article from the New York Times, that the Obama administration has returned to this myth that there are moderate rebel groups in Syria and that we can arm them. I guess now what we're going to decide is that al-Nusra is more moderate than the Islamic State, so we're going to provide arms to the few al-Nusra fighters that have not already migrated over to the Islamic State, not recognizing that there is no battle now between al-Nusra and the Islamic State. And beyond al-Nusra and the Islamic State, there are no unaffiliated, unaligned rebel operators in that country. The New York Times reported late Tuesday the White House officials believe that Great Britain and Australia would be willing to join the United States. You've got to be careful here in airstrikes in Syria. When the United States tried to get a coalition to bomb Damascus, the UK voted no. The Parliament in the UK said no. We won't play. So you have to be really careful with Great Britain. Now, Australia will probably do whatever Britain does, but if Great Britain doesn't play, I would doubt that Australia would play. The Times also reported that the U.S. has asked the Turkish government to help seal that country's border with Syria, which has proven to be an easy crossing point for foreign militants. hooking up with the Islamic State. There's not a chance in the world of that, because Turkey, Erdogan, is a Sunni. He's turned on his former friend, Assad, and is campaigning on behalf of the Islamic State. The paper also reported that the White House is seeking intelligence help from Jordan. As, by the way, Jordan can be of no help here. Jordan will be the next victim, but they will be no help. As well as financial support for groups like the moderate Free Syrian Army from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. One of the things that has been true from the beginning is A, there has never been a Free Syrian Army. B, that Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates have deliberately shunned all but the most fundamentalist Islamic groups. So you will never get them to provide weapons to a Free Syrian Army, even if there were such a thing, and there isn't. I mean, this is going back into mythology. It's very much like everyone saying that we're going to weaponize the Kurds, we're going to weaponize the Shiites, and we're then going to say that we're telling Iraq that we're only going to bomb if you agree to an all-inclusive government. It's just stupid. Thus far, there haven't been any public commitments on behalf of any nation to join a broad coalition of bombers for Syria. Reuters is reporting that the United States is intensifying its push to build that international coalition against the Islamic State in Iraq and in Syria, including recruiting partners for potential joint military action, Obama administration officials said. Britain and Australia remain the only potential candidates thus far, U.S. officials said. Germany on Wednesday said that it was in talks with the United States and other international partners about possible military action against the Islamic State, but made it clear that it would not participate. We're working with our partners and asking how they might be able to contribute. There are a range of ways to contribute: humanitarian, militarily, intelligence, diplomatic. State Department spokesperson Jen Paskey told reporters, I mean, that's pretty amazing, that we're using our State Department to form an alliance for war. And, you know, there is no humanitarian solution that's going to diminish the influence of the Islamic State. There is no intelligence that can be gained to use against the Islamic State, save doing what the world seems unwilling to do, which is to hold Islam against them, to quote from the Quran and Hadith to demonstrate that Islam is a terrorist manifesto, a declaration of war against all humankind. And you're not going to negotiate with them diplomatically. So what we're hearing here is that getting countries to join a coalition militarily is just not occurring. It's unclear, this article says, how many nations will sign up. And, you know, we're going to twist countries' arms. There will be all sorts of backroom deals for war materials and all sorts of things just to get this coalition, all making America weaker in the process. Some, such as trusted ally Britain, harbor bitter memories of joining the U.S.-led coalition of the willing in the 2003 invasion of Iraq that included troops from 38 nations that made a very bad situation infinitely worse. Others, such as France, refused to join that action. The claims of existence of weapons of mass destructions which spurred the coalition to act were found false. The United States, the official said, could act alone against the militants who have seized a third of each Iraq and Syria and declared open war against the West and want to establish a hub of jihadism in the heart of the Arab world. No, they don't. They're not trying to create a hub of jihadism, and they haven't declared open war against the West. They're doing their thing. They're being Muslims, which means they're being ruthless. They're engaged in the Islamic behavior of crucifixions, of beheadings, because Muhammad and the Quran speak of crucifixions and beheadings, of being good Muslim behavior. They're engaged in rape and in the slave trade because that's what Muhammad did. That's what the Quran endorses. They're engaged in the old, old Islamic methods of convert to Islam or die, because that's what Muhammad preached. That's what Muhammad did. They're just being Muslims there. The best thing that the world could possibly do is quarantine them there. Don't bomb them there. The United States, a senior White House aides met this week to discuss the strategy for expanding the assault on the Islamic State, including the possibility of airstrikes on the militants in Syria, an escalation that would almost certainly be riskier than the current U.S. campaign in Iraq. While Iraq's government welcomed the role of U.S. warplanes to attack the militants, why? Because the Iraqi government is Shia. The militants are Sunni. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has warned that any strikes conducted without his permission would be considered an act of aggression. The British Embassy in Washington said it has not received a request from the United States for airstrikes, but that Prime Minister Tony Abbott said that humanitarian aid in Iraq could continue, but declined to say whether Australia would join the U.S. in any military action. So Australians are saying, well, I don't know if we're going to play, and the British haven't committed, and others have just said, no, we're not going to play.